Hello, everybody. Jan Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership, and really excited you're with us today. We've got a great episode, and we're going to be talking about burnout and boundaries, a career survival discussion. And I'm delighted to have as our special guest, Sean Conley, my good friend down in LA, who works for Baker Hughes out of Houston. And before that, he was with Disney, General Electric, NBC Universal, Conley Global, and you've been in your role since 2018, and you've been in learning transformation leader your entire career, Sean, right?
That is correct. It's been a long time I've been doing some form of learning. And Jan, I love the title, Survival, right?
Yeah, that's what we're trying. And again, a lot of what we're going to talk about today is Survival. But what we also want to do is answer a lot of your questions and comments. So if you could, if you're listening in, if you could type in where you're listening from, we'd love to see. And if you've got any questions along the way, we'd love to hear from you. And Sean, I've got some resources that I want to refer to, of course. But I just want to talk about, you know, why you and I came up with this topic. We were talking about some of the things that we're hearing from folks out there. And, you know, we survived, you know, this big brunt of the pandemic, though we're not out of the woods yet. And, you know, we're hearing about the great resignation, the great reshuffle. Just today on LinkedIn, there was a whole article about millennials really searching for meaning in their jobs. People are burned out. They don't understand the boundaries. There's pressure and supply chain and all these things to work harder. And these values are all bumping up against each other. And that's what we talked about. And you're seeing it in the trenches as a corporate transformation and learning.
It's hard, isn't it? I mean, we're in, and I think it's overused, but we're in these unprecedented times, right? Where none of us have been here before. But what we're really seeing is just how difficult this really is and how taxing it is on us as people, us as team members, us as team leaders, as companies. This is just really, it's really dynamic and challenging times for all of us.
Yeah, and we've got people from all over the world, from Dubai, Egypt, California, Switzerland, I mean, everywhere. And thank you all for joining in. And right away, I think you know this person, Shankar.
Yeah.
Would love for Sean to tell how he helped me take the first step in setting boundaries and embarking on the survival discussion.
I love it. It's a great question. And thank you, Shankar, for asking that question. You know, we actually just had a conversation about this on Friday, this idea of how our lives have just been overwhelmed by sitting in front of a computer, you know, day after day, hour after hour. And we both were having this conversation. And honestly, when you look at your calendar and you've got triple bookings, no wonder we're stressed out, right? No wonder right. We're having a hard time with this, because our brains start to look at that. And then we're like, what am I supposed to do with this? How do I get out of this? And then we're constantly on that hamster wheel, running behind, trying to catch up with something. And it's really difficult. So one of the things that I always suggest for people when it comes to how do you start to set boundaries is you have to look at your calendar. You've got to set those things, even from like, when do you want to start? When do you want to end your day? And then you work your day in the middle, right? And kind of chunking your day a little bit. But it's a super helpful just methodology so that when you open up your life and you open up your calendar, you're not immediately overwhelmed. Because as soon as we get overwhelmed, there's really not much help for us, right? Because we just go down this path and then we're just trying to scramble. But if you step back a little bit and then set those boundaries, like start times, end times, make sure you have a lunchtime in the middle there. And then it leaves you with multiple hours in between where you can start to schedule your day.
Yeah. And, you know, to that point, Sean, I think what you're really talking about, you know, when you look at calendar is they say, you know, tell me what you value, I might believe you. Show me your calendar and your checking account, and I will know what you value. Because, yeah. You know, where we spend our time, where we spend our money. The thing I wanted to throw up here is a resource, and I'll put this in the chat as well. And I've assigned this to a lot of people that I coach as something to really look at. And that is a values exercise. And it's real simple in that you look at all these words that are values, maybe it's 150, and you circle all the ones that are relevant. And then you start cutting it back. Maybe there's 25 and you get it down to 10, get it down to 5. And then you really say, you know, hey, what is it that I truly value? Most people will put family and friendships at the top. But, you know, it really goes around the F's, as I call them. Family, it could be fulfillment. A lot of things have to do with our career. It could be faith. It could be fitness, you know, our health. It could be finances. But what happens oftentimes is these values, you know, they compete with each other. And that's where I think, you know, we get into trouble. So any tips or thoughts you have on helping people really understand what's important in their life as far as how they define success?
Yeah, you know, what a great question. And I think my first piece of advice would be just to stop, right? And take a deep breath. You know, I'm not a neuroscientist, but I understand our brains, you know, a little bit. And the fact that we are being bombarded with so much information and with too much going on, you can't get clarity. And so I think this idea of just stopping for a moment, and like you said, even if it's just doing a values exercise, but you need to stop. You need to step back. You need to take a deep breath. And then look at what those values are. And if it's, you know, family and faith and fulfillment, fitness, whatever it might be, I suggest finding the similarities versus the differences in those. Because it's not like you have to stop one to do the other. It's if I can find the bridge between all of those, like why is my family, and if it's faith and fitness, why is it all important? Well, it helps make me a better person. So what's the bigger big, if you will? What's the bigger picture for why I'm doing what I'm doing? But you can't do that when you're in the heat of the battle. You can't do that when you're overwhelmed by triple meetings and, you know, kids and dogs barking and all that kind of stuff. You can only do that when you take a step back and you know, almost like, not to go all, you know, zen, but have a moment of silence. And then look at the words that you have in front of you.
Yeah, I think that's great counsel. And again, I'm going to pull up a few different things as we go through our discussion today. And one of these I'm pulling up right now is a podcast that we did a couple of years ago with a guy named Greg McEwen. And he wrote Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And what was, you know, really interesting about, you know, what we talked about with Greg is he asked this simple little question. When we're looking at all our priorities and all the things that we're grappling with, and it was, for how long will this matter?
Yeah.
You know, so, and I saw something yesterday from a woman that's pretty active on LinkedIn, really good thought leader named Juliet Funt. And she said, a meeting request is not a subpoena. And I really like that, because I thought, you know, every time we get requests, we say yes automatically. Or we think, well, I'm going to go to this meeting and I will stay from the start to the end, instead of saying, hey, I can drop in for 10 minutes. I can be there at the end to offer something, or, hey, there's not an agenda, so I'm not going to attend. And to really look at what the high value activities are, it's a challenge.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's not a subpoena. And sometimes it feels that way, doesn't it? And this idea that, if you can't add value, why do we go, right? Well, sometimes we go, and sometimes it feeds our egos, right? Where I feel like, oh, I have to be there because somebody asked me, and obviously I have an opinion or whatever it might be. But when we get over that and you can step back, like what you said, you know, you just have to step back and say, well, there's no agenda. This, I don't really have anything to say here, but it's okay to say no. Or listen, I'll pop in, like you said, at the last 10 minutes, or I'll be there at the beginning. I've tried to do that myself lately, because I realized it was actually that conversation I was having with Shankar earlier, that, you know, I would be a hypocrite if I was suggesting people, you know, chunk your calendars and if I didn't do it. And, but I'm like everybody else. And, you know, I get meeting requests and we have to ask ourselves, so I love the subpoena. Is that subpoena worth it? You know, do I really need to go to court that day? And do I really need to be in front of this jury? But maybe the answer is no.
Yeah.
And do you find, like, I don't know, Jen, something I was thinking about is there was a time before, like if we back it up before this pandemic, right, that I didn't work as crazy as they work now, right? Because you would have, and I've always been a remote worker, but when people were commuting into work and things like that, it was my time to take care of myself. And then you have your kind of traditional regular hours, and then people who are in the same building have conversations together. But now, because we're in this more virtual world, why haven't we all let it just, you know, go to pot, right? We've just been like, oh, it's okay to book a meeting at 4:30 in the morning and then at 8 o'clock at night. That's not okay.
Right. Well, and I've seen some organizations where, you know, basically they'll say, you know, the meeting hours are basically from a Pacific time for the whole country is 8 to 1.
Perfect.
Eight to one, which on the East Coast would be 11 to 4.
Yeah.
And that's the only time that you can really, you know, have meetings. And that's the only time that you should be camera ready. You know, the rest of the time, if you need to meet, you do have different things, it's phone calls. But what I think we haven't done a very good job during the pandemic is basically had a culture by design.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all been by default. You know, we just, you know, I mean, there used to be sort of these rules, you know, you showed up, you had a collar, you know, you wore dress slacks or whatever it was, but there were rules about how you showed up and how you participated. And during this whole thing, you know, we haven't really figured that out. And so the expectations are all over the place. And so what people think, you know, again, if I get a text, I have to respond immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us probably don't even know how to set our phone so that the text has an auto respond that basically says, hey, I'm not available. When I'm back in office mode, I'll get back with you. And so there's this whole thing of, boy, if I'm not doing that, then somebody's going to think I'm not working.
Do you think part of this, Jen, came from our internal fear? Because, and I think about, you know, at the beginning of all of this, right? I don't even know how long it's been. It's a year and a half or whatever. We've been in this crazy world. But before that, we just replaced it with something else because we were all traveling and whatever. So we just switched all that to something else. But there was, to me, and I'm, you know, using myself as an example, at the beginning of this, I was fearful. Like, not only just for what's happening in the world, this unknown, but there was a time when I didn't know if I was going to be employed because everything was kind of unraveling around me.
Yeah.
So as an example, then I went into fear mode, react mode, which is just say yes to everything. You know, B, you've got to be seen now. You have to do everything. You've got to go, 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 go. And don't let anybody see you not working. You know, like that mentality.
Right.
And it's the problem is now that we've learned how to, I think, deal with the situation, we haven't learned how to undeal with what got us here.
Well, and again, I mean, there's a leadership responsibility to create an environment where people feel safe, not fearful. Because when we're fearful, we get tunnel vision. We aren't creative. We aren't innovative. We're blind to the big picture. At the same time, we all as individuals have a responsibility. Like the title of our discussion today is to push back, to set boundaries. And you know, there's plenty of books on my bookshelf by leaders that say at some point in their career they told their boss no.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to work on Sundays. I'm not going to work past 6 tonight.
Yeah.
I'm not going to miss my kid's soccer game. And again, if they were really good employees and valued, there might have been a little bit of discomfort, but eventually, you know, they set that boundary. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, because they knew they were a high performer. Let me throw something in, somebody said, and I'm going to get to the questions that are coming in. Yeah. So be patient with me, everybody. Sean, I wanted to see if you can relate to this. I'm guilty of being an overtasker. And I don't know if that also means multitasking, but.
I'm laughing because I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, there's that level of, and I feel for that because I'm the same way. Like I want to, it's how we sometimes prove our worth, right? Is overtasking, being busy and things like that. I think the question we have to ask ourselves is when I'm doing that, at what expense, right? So if I'm overtask multiple things, and you know, there's that, oh, but I'm a great multitasker. It's like, no, you're not. None of us are, right? Because we're not wired that way. You can, and I truly believe you can do multiple things at the same time, but you are not giving any of those things the attention they deserve. And it oftentimes takes you longer, right? Yeah. And so I don't know if it's empathy or sympathy or both because of that whole world of being an overtasker. I think we have to ask ourselves, why? Where does it come from? And to your point, do I feel safe to say no? It's okay to say no.
Well, I think the other part is, you know, I went around the room the other day with a group of executives and the CEO was in the room and I said, what's your biggest challenge right now? Senior executives. Every one of them said time. And I said to the CEO later, I'm like, do you think time's the issue? And he goes, no. I go, the issue is? And he says, they don't know what the priorities are.
Yeah.
And then he said, that's my fault. And I said, yes, and it's their fault. I mean, because we have a responsibility to say, look, I can't do 100 different things. Yeah. What is the most important thing? And this kind of goes back to the values exercise. We need to do the values exercise to figure out what's important for us. We need to do the same thing with our work life. Hey, of all the tasks, all the things on my desk right now, what's the most important? What's the biggest bang for the buck? So I think that's critical. And I just want to show you, we got somebody from Tanzania, love East Africa. Welcome, Ronald from Tanzania. And then this came in from Anna. And she's asking, so when I say 8 to 1 Pacific time, yes, which is 11 to 4. So you're just being available for Zoom while the continental US is in 8 to 5. What I'm saying is for all of us that are all spread out in lots of time zones, I mean, that's when we should be having meetings. I mean, you know, as you and I know, you and I sometimes get up at 6 or 3 in the morning for phone calls, you know, and it's like, you know, yeah. We do what we got to do once in a while, but that shouldn't be the norm. That shouldn't be the regular. Yeah. Or somebody on the East Coast on Zoom call at 7, 8 o'clock at night. You know, they have a life. They have other things. Again, once in a while, but if it becomes the norm, then somebody's basically saying, I don't care.
Exactly.
I don't care.
It's like, or I don't respect you, or... And I don't even know that we even say that. We just are just like, go, 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 go. Oh, 4 a.m. is fine, or 7 a.m. because we're creep. You know, now what's happening, I think, is we have that traditional kind of work days, right? And then people are like, well, those are always so busy, so I'm going to book on this end or this end of it. And we've just extended this, and it's pure madness, right?
Yeah.
And I think to that comment that was just made, it's – because many of us on this call are probably working in, you know, on global teams. So there are some things you can do though. You know, it might be 8 to 1 Pacific time, but that's not going to work for, you know, your folks in other parts of the world. So you might need to adjust that or rotate it. So at least it's fair. So it's, you know, it's a give and take. And I don't know what that rotation is. I think that's something that the teams have to figure out, but there are ways that you can look at the calendar to say, you know, maybe it's not even a 4-hour window. Maybe it's only a 2-hour window.
Yeah.
And you can find it at a time that is at least doable for most people. I work with a lot of folks, you know, like, so I'm in Los Angeles and I work with a lot of folks in Europe, but also in Asia Pacific, Singapore, and it's 16 hours ahead of me. And so, you know, I get on a call at 5:30 in the morning, which is still late in the evening for them. But then I'm like, well, why don't I book it at 6 o'clock my time, which is, you know, you can trade off.
Right.
And that's part of this. Setting boundaries, I think people say, oh, it has to fit in this box. Yep. But sometimes your boundaries are, well, we're just going to have this pocket over here and a pocket over here and a pocket over here, but it's fair and it starts to work for everybody.
Yeah. I'm going to get to some more comments and questions that we've got coming in, but I want to get to another book recommendation I've got. This is written a few years ago by a fellow named Clayton Christensen, who has since passed away. He was a Harvard business professor, and it was based on a commencement address he gave, and it was, "How Will You Measure Your Life?"
Oh, yeah.
And what was so notable about it was he was one of the first business people to basically say success at work can't come at the expense of your home life and vice versa. And what I really loved about, you know, what he said in his book was, you know, you get one shot, you know, with your family, and they will be the most forgiving and get, you know, and they'll be understanding, but over time it takes a toll, and that you've really got to set boundaries. And Clayton Christensen gave a great example how, you know, he was on a championship basketball team, and based on his faith, he wouldn't play on Sundays. And the coach said, you know, "Hey, just this once, play on Sunday." And he said, "No, just this once is a slippery slope."
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's some great lessons in that book about leadership and boundaries and questions and ethics and moral. And I think anybody that's in the midst of, you know, having a young family and in that sort of dynamic, this book would really be helpful.
It's a great book. I've read that.
Yep. Let's go through. Let's get to some questions and comments here. The price of success has come at the expense of our personal lives. Oftentimes, I agree, Elizabeth, leading to burnout. How do we bring change into our organization without being viewed as not committed, which is a great question. Sean, you wanna take a crack at that?
Listen, this is gonna sound real easy, but it's not. But you have to be the one that starts it, right? I am so happy to be in this conversation right now, because in just like the first question, you know, earlier from someone that I've been working with, this is a reminder for all of us, right? You might not be able to change your whole organization, but it takes one person, right? And if you set those boundaries, but you need to stick with them, but also, you know, it's a transition. Like, I don't know that you can do it all overnight, because the best of intentions we have might not go the way we want them to. But it's an education piece. And it's just like you said, Jen, you know, in the book, is it's a slippery slope when we do it. But start, you know, start small, and you don't have to boil the ocean. Just maybe it's one or two meetings for you. I try now to get out of this chair at least every couple hours, because I just can't. It's not even, it's not even that comfortable anymore. I thought it was the most comfortable chair, and then I realized when you sit in it all day, it is no longer comfortable. But, you know, sometimes you can even put in some headphones and, with technology, dial in on a phone and go for a walk during the meeting. And I think it's okay to even let people know what you're doing. And
yeah,
you know, that's fine. You're still paying attention, or sit outside and change your environment. But little things that feed your brain a little bit differently are going to help. But I think the only thing I could say to Elizabeth is, you got to start somewhere, right? It has to start small things with us.
And great points. And Elizabeth, I'm reminded of a speech Tom Hanks gave when he accepted an award a few years ago. And he got up and he's like, he was talking to actors, and he said, you know, this acting thing is pretty simple. You know, you got to show up on time. You got to know your lines, and you better bring something creative to the director. And I thought about that, you know, because he's like lecturing the actors, and I'm like, that's great advice no matter what you do, whether you're an actor or not. You know, be on time, you know your stuff, and bring something creative. If you do that, nobody's going to question your commitment no matter what hours you work or don't work. Yeah. You know, when you're there, if you're present, you're curious, you care, that is going to say a lot. And I think that's the part we have to change around a little bit. You know, we still have so many people that feel, you know, that X amount of hours equals work. And I remember when I was coming up, you know, you got to work before the boss showed up, you left after the boss, and that's how you showed your worth. I mean, it didn't even matter what you did. And that was where the term empty suit came from, because there was a bunch of people that looked good, were there all day drinking coffee and not getting anything done. These days, we've got great metrics to figure out what really matters. So
let me throw something else onto that, because I think you bring up such a great point, Jan. It's this, I would challenge people that when you're in those meetings, what are you really doing, right? Are you, to your point, are you fully present and adding value to that meeting? Or, and you all know this and you've seen this, right? Or are you seeing people like going like this on their phones, texting, yeah, doing something else, or typing? Like, you can literally see it, right? And, but yet we've accepted that, like, oh, it's okay, but it's really not, right? Because we're not present. And, you know, a lot of companies, you know, you book those standard 1 hour meetings, right? And I've heard a bunch of different studies, but one of the studies I heard was out of a 1 hour meeting, only about 17 minutes is actually on the meeting. Now, people can argue times and things like that, but what we do know, it's not the full hour, right? Because you're waiting for people, over talking, texting, what, you know, there's all those other things. So don't be, you know, in such a routine that you book an hour meeting. Book a 30-minute meeting. 30 minutes of productivity is better than an hour of wasted time.
Yeah. If I were back as a CEO again, what I would institute would be, you could only book 20 or 40-minute meetings. And the reason is, people need a break to use the bathroom, to get coffee, to do. And if we always are going from the top of the hour to the bottom or the bottom to the top, we never have a break. So if all meetings are 20 or 40, then you can ensure that people have time to prepare for the meeting. Wouldn't that be novel? Or follow up after the meeting. Because if it's a real meeting, then at the end of it, you're saying who does what by when.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to do work if it's a real meeting. So let me throw up another one here, Sean. What do we do when we push back on our leaders to respect boundaries and they are unwilling? Great question, Catherine. Thank you. What do you think?
It's an interesting one, but I just come back to that question of, I try to ask it like this, help me understand why. You know, I think it's just a dialogue, but a dialogue that's healthy comes from having a relationship. And so we need to have foster good relationships with people so that you can ask those questions. But I know that's not always the reality, right? But sometimes it's okay. It's okay to say, like, I don't say I'm not going. I would rather say, help me understand why I need to be there. What value am I bringing? Because maybe I'm missing something. But it comes down to, A, I think it's our role as leaders to create a safe environment, but I know it's not always the reality. And sometimes we're smarter than the folks that we're supposed to be in, you know, on these teams with. And I don't mean education, I just mean logical, like, you know, we think differently. But I think if you can go to somebody and say, help me understand, I'm curious, what am I missing? You know, it's softer ways of asking a very poignant question.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree, Sean, and to avoid the why, because why puts people in a defensive mode. You say, Sean, why'd you schedule this meeting at this time? Say, well, help me understand. Walk me through the thought process. What are we trying to achieve? Do you think there's another way we could get this done differently? We've got another question from Nabila. How to make your boundaries clear to others when they are your family members or your colleagues? How to be assertive when you're afraid it will hurt them, hurt their feelings? Great question.
Giving me all the tough ones, right? No, but I think, you know, it's the same kind of comment, right? If we're trying to set clear boundaries, I like to come from that school of thought to say to somebody, you know, I want to try something new, and I've never done this before. And so it's a way to bring them into the conversation. And maybe you can set those boundaries together versus, these are my boundaries, live with them. What if we figure out how to set boundaries together? And what if we did this as a team? What if we did this as a family? Imagine all the conversations you could have if you had it with your kids or, you know, loved ones, whoever, you said, how are we going to, I have to work, you have to work, you got to go to school, all that stuff. But yeah, we don't sit down and talk about these things. We tend to talk about these things instead of talking, you know, with people. You know, we talk around things, not about, not the, the real core conversation. But I think it'd be so awesome just to sit down and say, I'm not setting boundaries for me. I'm setting boundaries for us. And join me. Let's set it together. Let's set boundaries together. I don't know if that would help, but
I'm taking
a lot of notes, by the way, because I'm like, that's a good idea.
No, these are great questions. And another one is, does it make it seem like you're, you know, shirking your responsibilities or avoiding the task at hand? And again, to your point, Sean, if you have a good relationship, if you've got aligned expectations, then you know what the priorities are. And again, I think part of it is you have to look in the mirror and say, am I avoiding the task at hand? Because oftentimes as a coach, you know, one of the things I'll start off, if I'm coaching Sean today, I'm like, okay, Sean, we met 2 weeks ago. What are you hoping I won't bring up today? Because what I know is Sean's trying to tackle a big project, and like all of us, he's procrastinating. And what I want to do, if I can help him, is why? Why? You know, is there something external? Is it Sean? You know, what is it? So again, great comments.
And obviously with that last question that came up there, to your point, if you're avoiding the task, then that's a problem right there. But another way to say it is to say, which is why I need to have this extra time. I'd like to set some time so I can focus on this task. But setting boundaries doesn't come at the cost of not doing the job, right? Yeah. It's the way that we do the job is what we're really talking about here.
Yep. And next question comes from my best friend in all of Ireland, Andrew Parrish, who just had a birthday the other day. Happy birthday, Andrew. We won't tell everybody how old you are, but I know how old you are. You're asking, what's your view on the 4-day weekends or unlimited vacation time? Is it all gimmick or does it deliver value? What have you seen, Sean?
Oh, I'm a fan. I am a fan of this. But again, it comes at a relationship, right? I read a study that with unlimited vacation time, people actually take less. I heard that once.
That was the case when I was a CEO. I had unlimited PTO. People took less vacation time, which wasn't a good thing.
It's not a good thing. So I'm a fan of taking time that you need when you need it, right? I love this idea of 4-day weekends and things like that. One thing that I try to do, and I've been doing this with my own way, is I try to take 1 week off every quarter from work. And it's not always, you know, perfect, or maybe it's 3 days. But the one thing I really tried to do this year, and I've done it twice, is without my computer.
Yeah.
And to really take that time off. And I will tell you, the first time we did it was kind of scary, because you have to go through with those withdrawals of like, oh, wait, the world's going to fall apart. Well, no, it's not. It's all good. But what a difference, right? And so if you can do that. But I love that. We started something on our team a while ago, which is called Freedom Fridays, where we don't book meetings on Fridays. Now, that has all gone out the window, personally. I know other folks on the team are still doing it. I've had to adjust, so I'm doing meetings in the morning, but I'm trying my best. And I made a commitment to myself that I'm going to get back to that meeting-free Friday. And it's funny, because somebody said to me, oh, what, you guys don't work on Friday? I'm like, no, actually, I get more work done on Friday because I can focus and I get things done. So it's just, it's an education piece though too.
Yep. I've got another book recommendation. This is an oldie, but a goodie. And I love the title. What Should I Do With My Life? The True Story of People Who Answered the Ultimate Question. And what's amazing about this book, and I loved it when I read it, Poe Bronson, that's the fellow's name that wrote it, the author, he went out and interviewed people that were happy. and one was a doorman at a Marriott. One was a catfish farmer. And they had other jobs before. And what he found was that they found value in service. And that's really what it was all about. And I remember the doorman at the Marriott, basically said, you know, I've got the most important job in the world. All these people are coming in and having really important business meetings, and I get to basically set the tone for those meetings.
Yeah.
If I'm friendly and I welcome them, I put a smile on their face, they're going to go in and they're going to have a great business meeting. And, you know, it's just interesting because so many of us possibly are really trying to determine, hey, am I doing my life's work? Am I doing what really is going to fulfill me? And, you know, oftentimes as a coach, I'll ask people, do you have a job? Do you have a career? Or do you have a calling? Wouldn't it be nice if, you know, we get paid to do our calling? Wouldn't that be great?
It makes, I hope everybody's just reflecting on that because it's such a great thing. And the only person that can answer that question is you as the individual, right? I also love, Jan, that you're recommending all the books I love. These are all great books.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really great stories and great foundations. But if I can just say that piece about, you know, a calling, I believe that about myself. And I don't know that I've ever used those terms, but I love what I get to do. I get frustrated like everybody else. I get crazy busy like everybody else. I let my boundaries go like everybody else, but it's a reminder that I love what I do. And the only reason I can be good at it is if I understand how important these really are, because the days I don't feel good about it, and the days that I'm stressed about it and not living my calling are the days that I let my boundaries go.
Yeah. And I've got one other one I wanted to pull up, and it is an article I wrote a long time ago, and it was called, let me see, here it is. There we go. The Development Plan, 29 questions, hard questions, and 5 easy steps. And what I've got there are basically really hard questions that go through, you know, what happened in the last year? What'd you learn about yourself? What are the goals for this year? What are the things you need to do and plan? And oftentimes with folks, I'll ask them, you know, to, you know, look at the values exercise, figure out what you value, what's important in your life, and then do the goals exercise. And I'll put that in the link. And for those of you that have asked, yes, this session is being recorded on YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn. So you'll be able to see the whole thing there. But, you know, in addition to the articles and the books and things, what I would also urge you to do is to seek out accountability partners, peers, or mentors. You know, and if you're at that point in your career where you think you've got a lot of wisdom and counsel, then find people that you can mentor. And if you're somebody that's new in your career, be somebody that's receptive, you know, somebody that engages somebody and that they want to kind of take you on and help and walk you through things. And just like I started out today talking about Sean's career, you know, Disney, General Electric, NBC Universal, your own consulting firm, Baker Hughes. It's a conglomeration. Most of us are not going to work at one firm for 40 years and get a gold watch. You know, we're going to have a whole bunch of experiences and a journey. And I had Dave Crenshaw on LinkedIn Live last week, and I loved what he said about success. And that was, success shouldn't be a destination. You know, when I get X amount of money, when I get this promotion, I will be happy. Because that, you know, we've all seen it, you know, that you've got to figure out, hey, what are things that I can do every single day that are fulfilling, that I can serve other people, that will fill my bucket, if you will. Sean, I've got one other thing, and then I wanted to get your closing thoughts. And this is from Nabila again. How do you choose the right mentor for you? I mean, you've had great mentors in your life, and you've been a great mentor to many people.
Thank you. I actually have a mentor that I've had in my life for, she will kill me, like over 35 years now. Wow. And it's funny because I don't think we ever started off like, oh, will you be my mentor? I don't think I've ever asked her that question. But Denise, who she was a supervisor of mine, a boss of mine, but she's also the person I credit my entire career to. Someone who found in me a skill of being able to help in this learning and development arena. And, you know, I think I just got really lucky, right? I think the way to find a mentor is to build a relationship with somebody. I don't personally believe in like forced matching and things like that. I know companies that do that, and it's fine. I think internally that's fine. You get some stuff and you get something out of it. But the real way to find a mentor is to build a relationship with somebody and then just start the conversation. I don't even think if you have the right relationship that you even have to ask somebody, hey, will you be my mentor? You know, it's you start to make that connection with an individual, and you have to take the time to build a relationship. But you also have to understand, I think, why you're seeking some, you know, advice from a mentor or whatever. But mentors come from all over the place. I mean, yep. John, I consider you a mentor of mine. Yeah. In what we do, but I think it's relationship.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I think it kind of goes to the law of reciprocity. Sometimes young people think, well, what do I have to offer? Well, what you have to offer is, you know, keep me in the loop. Let me know how you're progressing. Let me know about the journey. You know, the highs and the lows. You know, I wanna be there for you. I work with a lot of veterans that are transitioning out, and you know, I really appreciate when they stay in touch. I mean, that's all they have to do, is stay in touch. So, Sean, we've talked about burnout and boundaries. And, you know, one thing I heard a couple months ago, somebody said, if you think you're burned out, you're burned out. And if you don't think you're burned out, you're burned out.
Yeah.
That, you know, we probably all are. And I had somebody the other day say to me, you know, I won't describe it in too much detail, but somebody went on, a very high level executive said, I went on a fantastic vacation, no phone, no TV with my family, most beautiful place on earth. And it did not recharge me. And it was a week. And I relayed that to someone. And they said, well, that's because they didn't take 2 weeks. But, you know, here's somebody that took a week vacation. They still didn't recharge. So I think it's incumbent on us, you know, that we've got to figure out what's right for us. We've got to talk to people. We've got to read. We've got to get perspectives. You know, when we think about work, I would love for people to not think about, oh, it's a task and it's a way to make money. And I mean, no matter what we do, we're serving our fellow human beings. I mean, that's what work is. I mean, whether you're delivering FedEx or you're doing what we do, or, you know, baking bread. I mean, we're taking care of our fellow man, fellow woman. And I think if we look at it that way, that, boy, this is a gift and we get to do these things. We get to bring a little bit of joy into people's lives. That might be a way to look at things in a lot healthier way than something you gotta do, something you have to do. Any closing thoughts from you, Sean?
You just made me think of, you know, that you know, human beings, right? I guess the question I would ask is, are you being human? You know, just flip that. And are you being human to me means, are you being kind and caring? Are you forgiving of yourself? Are you looking after other people? Is your heart in the right place? Yeah. That's where boundaries come from. And you'll get to a place where you don't, it's not even a conversation about boundaries. It's a conversation, to your point, about people and helping people. So I just think, you know, remember to be human.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, to our audience, we thank you for dialing in from all over the world. We hope you share this once it's recorded, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn with folks. Continue to connect and follow Sean and I on LinkedIn and share your perspectives. And if there's something you'd like to see in a future LinkedIn Live episode, let us know. And again, to my friend Sean, who I also, you know, you've mentored me along the way as well. I spoke to someone the other day and they said, I just love Sean. Every time you talk to Sean, your day is better. and brighter and you energize. And, you know, that's, you know, that's why people are attracted to you and why you have such a big following, Sean. So thanks for sharing your wit and wisdom with us.
My pleasure. That's really, really kind. Thank you for sharing that.
Yep. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Thanks again for listening in today.
See ya.